Now, an hour of clarity for exhausted people of our nation mired in toxic partisanship. Left versus right. Us versus them. While we pay to keep our politicians fighting, how do we, the people, rise up and solve the great challenges of our time? We do it by embracing freedom and liberty. There may be no such thing as a free lunch, but this hour is as close as it gets. Welcome to A Free Solution.
Welcome to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin.
And we have a guest today, Mike Tremat. He is a candidate vying for the Libertarian Party nomination for president. Mike, welcome.
Crazy. That's crazy.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you guys. Thanks for letting me join you in WYSL territory and in Rochester.
Absolutely.
I was just up there for a few days in Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, Poughkeepsie, and right. Back to my home in Virginia.
Right on. It's a beautiful area. Hope you got to experience a bit of it. Were you up for the Libertarian Convention?
I was some weeks ago, but this time was collecting signatures for the petition drive to secure our ballot access. It's the hot button issue these days, as you probably well know.
Yeah.
The Libertarian Party has secured ballot access, or is about to, in 48 states, and we're still working on it in Illinois and New York. New York is going to be the hard one. So anyone out there that wants to pitch in, it's very important. Even if you're not a libertarian, even if you don't live in New York, it's an important issue, because if you believe in choice, if you believe in democracy, you got to believe in helping people get on the ballot.
100%. And it's going to take a lot of work in New York State. 45,000 valid signatures. It's going to be an effort. So thank you for coming up and for doing
that. A huge effort.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We had lots of volunteers out there, people from my team, people from other teams. We had a good time. We got a lot of work done, hundreds of signatures collected. So it's worth the effort, but we got a long, long ways to go and not a lot of time to get it done.
Right on. Well, I want to spend this whole time talking about like the politics of New York State and signature gathering. Like Tim and I have gone to the weeds on that enough times. So let's just start out with tell us a bit about yourself, your background, and why you wanted to run for president.
Sure. Look, I grew up a professional economist. I was in banking for a while when I got out of business school. By the way, I went to engineering school and business school in upstate New York. I was in Troy for 5 years. I lived in Albany for a couple years later on after that. And I grew up as a bit of a Republican. I was in commercial finance. I was fiscal conservative. Later on, I went to graduate school again in economics at the George Washington University. I worked as a professional economist for a long, long time. Worked for the White House for a couple of years. Worked as a professional advocate for free markets in Washington for almost a decade. Had my own business for almost a decade. A buddy of mine and I launched a business in strategic consulting and in executive education. I've taught economics at three different universities. And as a second career in public service, I became a police officer. It's something that I had always wanted to do. I went to the police academy at the age of 49. I was on the road for 11 and a half years in Florida from the age of 49 to 60. All as a registered libertarian, by the way.
Well, that's
go ahead. I want to jump in on this one, Mike. Libertarians and police officers, sometimes it feels like oil and vinegar, okay? Like Kevin and I are like pragmatic. We try to build bridges between these ideas and these concepts, and we get libertarians that are just like, you know, screw the cops. We hate them, blah, 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 blah. I want to hear your take on this. How are you going to bring everyone together?
First of all, I don't think it's statistically speaking, it's not true that most libertarians don't like cops, just as a practical matter. I know that
we have
don't.
A reputation, but
fair yes. enough. Fair enough.
That, yeah. that may be. I'm just yeah. pointing out that you don't want to mischaracterize your audience.
Right.
Done right, police work is the most libertarian thing you can do. Police work is all about public service. It's all about protecting life and liberty, protecting your civil liberties. Protecting your civil liberties from the state. And of course, it has to be said that done wrong, there's nothing less libertarianism, less libertarian, right? Mm-hmm. And so police officers have to learn the easy way or the hard way, but police officers learn that they are the first and sometimes last defense of the Constitution. If you don't take the Constitution seriously, sometimes there's no one else out there who will. So in my view, that's the big difference between good police work and bad police work, is the extent to which you take the Bill of Rights seriously, not just the Constitution generally, but in particular, you know, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, that you're out there protecting people's civil liberties. That's what it's all about, done right. So, you know, I had a great experience. I was able to find an agency that had a separate vice unit, so I didn't have to get involved with all the that, you know, I personally feel is stupid, you know, the war on drugs. And, you know, we had a separate traffic unit, so I didn't have to get involved with all the ticketing to meet revenue quotas for the town and stuff like that. And, you know, prostitution stings and, you know, all the stupid stuff that we as libertarians find so revolting. I didn't have to get involved with. Mine was just bread and butter on the road, responding to calls, taking care of criminal elements and providing service the best I could. So I had a very rewarding experience.
Right on. Okay. So you see law enforcement as, it when done right, the law enforcement should be protecting all the law. And ultimately the law of the land is the Constitution, right? If we're saying that, it's
absolutely
the Fourth Amendment, First Amendment, and then also protecting property. And you know, I like that libertarian saying
I think that we all agree on that. Yeah. I don't think that's just me. I think we all agree that that's the job of a police officer. We're just pissed off when officers do it wrong.
Right. Exactly. For sure. So yeah. But that's, and I agree again, like sometimes people like to characterize us as like anti-police when we criticize police, you know, because sometimes police officers abuse their power and they hurt people, right? They're not just out there making sure that people aren't getting hurt, people aren't having their stuff taken away, that there's some like justice and recompense for when someone is injured, right? That's what police and the criminal justice system as a whole should be protecting. But so you're out there doing that work, didn't have to get in some of those gray areas of the war on drugs and some other maybe victimless crimes that.
I wouldn't call it gray area. I would call it a black area. It's just, you know, places where the state shouldn't be.
Right.
So, you know, that's my view. I think most police officers would agree with me. Not all, but I would say, you know, I don't have statistics on this, so I'm a little bit out on a peninsula without a way to back this up, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think that most police officers would tell you that the war on drugs doesn't work as a practical matter. I don't know that most police officers would agree with me that as an ethical matter, the state has no business, right, telling you what you can or cannot do with your body. I don't know how many police officers would agree with that. That's something I don't have statistics on. But I would suggest that police, by and large, would agree that as a practical matter, it just doesn't work. It doesn't keep people safe. It doesn't keep people from addiction. It creates, you know, black markets, and black markets are dangerous and they kill people. And, you know, I've got the CPR experience to back that up. I have performed a lot of CPR in young men dying from addiction problems. And that's the result of black markets. That's not just the result of drugs per se.
Right. And so we'll kind of dive into the issues a bit on this. We already have, but like, there's a lot of police officers who feel like they don't really have a choice, right? Like they have to enforce the law as it is. So like they have to kind of jump in and do this stuff. So like, how do we, how do police officers and society as a whole deal with that? And then B, like, let's start jumping into what are some of the solutions at the federal level to maybe like roll some of this stuff back. So let's start with the first one though.
Well, I think everyone has got to protest. I mean, you don't have to be a police officer to raise awareness of the fact that the war on drugs doesn't work. I think most Americans would agree with that. And I think that we should be bringing it to the attention of the people who's, you know, who can do something about it. You know, our legislators need to be reminded that Americans have a problem with these programs that don't work. Americans don't like our young people dying from addiction, dying from overdoses, dying from situations that are fostered by black markets. We need a new approach as a practical matter. Even if you don't agree with me as an ethical proposition, mm-hmm. that the government really has no business telling us what we can or cannot do, even if you don't agree with me ethically, you've got to agree that as a practical matter, this is a failed effort. And we need to try something different. We're losing over 100,000 young people, mostly, every year to overdose deaths. We need to try something different. And I think that most Americans would agree with that proposition. And whether you're a cop or not, I call on police officers especially to raise awareness of it, because mm-hmm. as cops, we know that it doesn't work, right? Cops are the ones out there seeing the fact that this isn't going away, that black markets in many places are growing, not shrinking. Cops are the ones that are doing the CPR, the first response. We get that this is just a program that doesn't work. And so, yeah, cops do have to raise awareness of it, but I would suggest that we all do, and not just libertarians, right? Right. So
everyone who's seeing the consequences of these failed policies owes it. It's a responsibility as a citizen to raise awareness about it and to try to change it.
I think that that's well said. And, you know, everyone is touched by it. Everyone knows someone who has lost someone, right? And so we need to speak up and take this seriously. After all, we are standing up for ourselves and for each other. This isn't merely, you know, screw the state. Mm-hmm. There is an element of that, and that's important. And, you know, I love that, right? But there is something more fundamental even than that. These are our people. These are our young people. This is our culture. This is our society. These are our sons and daughters. People, what are we doing? If we're not standing up for these people, what are we doing with our own lives? Like, what is so much more important about what we're doing than standing up for our young people in the face of a program that makes it worse instead of better?
Okay, let me jump in again. Like, I want to hear your most practical solution to these things right now. Like, my life recently was touched two times in orbit, like distant orbit, but by young men falling apart and dying from it, being addicted to drugs. And they both had help in the past. They both had trouble in the past. And those two things combined left them hopeless. So what do we got that's practical here, Mike? What do we got?
The biggest thing that we need to do is to allow people, when they are acquiring these drugs, right? If people are going to acquire these drugs, we need to allow them to do it from someone with whom they can develop a relationship, someone whom they can trust. The reason people are dying is typically, not in every case, but typically the reason people are dying is because they don't know what the dosage is that they're taking. In many cases, they don't even know what's in the product that they're using, particularly with fentanyl. The reason there are so many deaths related to fentanyl is because fentanyl is so powerful that it is a cheap substitute for other narcotics, and it's used in lots of different products. And if you get the dosing wrong, it's really a problem because it is so strong. So you need to be able to acquire this from someone who knows what they're doing. And almost definitionally, that's not going to happen in a black market. So the most important thing that you can do is get the government the hell out of it. That is by far the most important thing that you can do.
Right on.
I like it. Yeah, no, look, black markets are protected by violence. Black markets are protected by deliberately overdosing a kid that looks like a problem, right? They're going to get rid of him by doing him a favor. Like, that's there's an epic amount of danger to a black market that people don't understand. We talk about it every day, that these people still have meaning. They still have, like, value. And when we step away from that reality, when we distance ourselves from being able to feel stuff like that, that's where we don't get solutions, we get authoritarianism. And
I agree. That's well said. And that brings up another element of this, in my view, that all too often citizens and especially politicians feel like they've done something about it by criminalizing it, right?
Sure.
If you vote to criminalize something you don't like, it makes you feel like you've done something. And the truth of the matter is, number one, you haven't. And number two, you've actually made it worse. But it is a lot of people, you know, authoritarianism is exactly the right word. It's exactly the right word. That's what this is all about, is politicians imposing their opinions on a lot of other people just to leverage their constituents' fear, leveraging their constituents wanting to do something and not knowing what to do about it. So their politicians sell them this load of crap about, well, you know, we're fighting drugs by criminalizing it. I'm sorry. No, you're not. That's just, you know, I've got a hammer in my toolbox. Everything looks like a nail. And so you go around slapping everything because criminalization is the one thing that you feel like you can do about it. I'm sorry. Put the hammer back in the box and let us get on with our lives.
Yeah. No, it's I do love that you said that, because I think there's so much bad policy that comes from politicians wanting to look like they did something. Right. Politicians want to like, look, no, see, I took action on this. Like, isn't that enough?
Right.
No, if the action ends up being more destructive than the status quo, then no, that's not enough. It's bad. Right. We need to do better.
Not all of our problems are public policy problems. You know, drug use, drug abuse is a medical problem, particularly when it turns into addiction. Mm-hmm. It can be a culture problem. It can be a societal problem. It can be a mental health problem. It can be psychological. There are many attenuated and adjacent problems to drug use, but that none of that implies it's a public policy issue. None of that implies we need the force of the state to try to help us out with this.
Or the way they're applying the force at the very least, right? Less force might be better in this situation.
Absolutely.
All right. Well,
I say, just as a practical matter, you know, even if philosophy aside, even if you didn't agree with us on the principles, on the ethics, even if you had a completely different philosophy, I mean, my goodness, this is a practical matter. Just as an empirical matter, look at the data. What we're doing doesn't work. Please let us try something else.
Yeah, look at the results. Well, I want to spend our entire segment talking about this. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about a couple other issues too. So if you had to pick two other issues that are really important that you want the WYSL audience to know about, what issues would be and why?
We need a completely different foreign policy. We need to stop taking money from fellow Americans and using it to project military hegemony abroad. We need to stop taking money from fellow Americans and giving it away in the form of foreign aid. We need to stop using it to foster proxy wars. We need to stop using it to confront the People's Republic of China, to stop using it to try to wear down the Russian army. These are all things that our government believes are top priority for us. And the truth is that they're not. The truth is that most Americans would not look at our foreign policy and say, boy, that sure has been successful. You know, there really aren't examples in our recent history. And by recent, I mean, you know, the last 80 years, there really are not examples of, gee, that cost us billions of dollars and thousands of lives, but it sure was a good idea anyway. No, there aren't examples of that. In the case of the Iraqi invasion and the Afghani invasion, the invasion by the American government into Iraq and Afghanistan, it wasn't billions of dollars. It was trillions of dollars that we lost. And it wasn't thousands of lives. We cost more than 1 million lives. These are things that the American public would not agree with. These do not align with our fundamental values.
Yeah.
And so I believe that Americans are ready for a very clear, very clean, very crisp anti-war message. Both, once again, based on principles and values and ethics, and on empirical grounds. It's just not true that the American government's foreign policy has been achieving things that Americans believe in our strategic interest. It's just not true. So I think Americans are ready for that message.
That's
number one.
Yeah. So let me like just give you one quick counter question to that, because we know what happened in Afghanistan. We know what happened in Iraq. We know that was bad. We don't know what's going to happen with like Taiwan and China, right? So people are saying, well, we need to sell weapons to Taiwan and give them material support because they are of strategic importance because of chip manufacturing. And, you know, they're a democracy in that could be taken over by an authoritarian government. Isn't that a good enough reason to extend our foreign policy into protect nations like that?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't clear the threshold of credibility. Number one, why is it that Taiwan is so important to our supply chain? Why is that? Why is that?
I can answer
because
that.
We have made the mistake for 50 years of accidentally telling the world that we would back up Taiwan. So we've created a self-fulfilling prophecy. We need to send the signal that if you want to invest in chip manufacturing in a place where the U.S. government, where the Department of Defense would back you up, come hell or high water, would go to war for you, maybe I could suggest a place like Rochester, which is a place where the Defense Department should go to war to protect you.
I'd like to think
so. Not Taiwan. We need to unwind that. And it would take years to unwind it. Mm-hmm. But the Chinese, the People's Republic of China, is willing to wait years. And that's what people don't understand, is that Washington plays a short game. Beijing does not. If you were to send this signal to Beijing, you can have your cake and eat it too. You just need to give us time to unwind. They would be patient. They do want to repatriate Taiwan, no question about it. But they don't need to do it, you know, by next spring. They want to do it eventually. And so that they, you know, they absolutely would be patient.
They're patient with
just
Hong Kong.
Example. And the fact that it's a democracy, I appreciate that. It saddens me, the possibility of losing, a democratically elected government. I think that that sucks. But just because I think it sucks doesn't mean that I should take everyone's money around the United States and use it to go to war over. Those are two different things.
I'm with you. I think we take a look at our fiscal policy in the United States, and it doesn't look sane to me. Now, we have something in common in that I studied economics when I went to college. You're an economist. What I see and the way that it's playing out, it looks like it's going to be a disaster, Mike. So economically, I want to steer you in a direction for your second point. Economically, this looks like a disaster. We're on a crash course, a collision course with
reality.
End of something. Yeah.
On a collision course with reality, and that would be the second thing that I would flag. The federal government of the United States is going to collapse before the middle of this century, full stop, unless we do something profound in terms of changing its course. And by the way, there's no reason to believe that a Republican politician or a Democratic politician is going to do a damn thing to change that course. Unless we fundamentally change the direction of our federal government, it will not make it past the middle of the century. Full stop. Can't. And I say that not, you know, because I can see the future. It's because I can do arithmetic. It's just not going to happen. And the problem is not that you would miss it or that I would miss it. This is not an organization that adds value to our lives. The problem is that a crash in the debt market would bring down the U.S. dollar, and that would plunge the world into a deep depression that would be very difficult out of which to climb in anything less than decades if the U.S. dollar were to collapse. That's the problem. We need competition among currencies. We need to replace the Federal Reserve System with something that's not quite as stupid. We need to shore up the dollar and make it stronger and allow other currencies to compete with it. And we need to stop the federal government from spending so much money. We need to cap spending. Because as much as libertarians say taxation is theft, about which we're exactly right, it needs to be said, all government spending is theft, not just the piece that's financed by taxation.
Well, I mean, like, Put a number on it then. Like, what do we can you get us down to where the federal government should be spending? Like, what does that look like? What's the future if you're elected president and, you know, maybe some libertarians get elected to Congress, we can actually change something. What does that look like from a fiscal policy perspective?
We need to cap spending at less than what current revenue is. You can't let revenue increase. You can't increase taxation, right? You need to stop allowing the Fed to create as much money as it wants. and you need to stop issuing debt. Okay. Once you shut down growth in all three of those, you need to cap spending at about 95% of what the revenue is that's coming. That's something like a 10% cut right away in the first moment, and bring it down by several percentage points a year until it's a fraction of what it is now. And it sounds draconian, but if you don't do that, it's going to collapse. Okay. So you can't tell me it's too draconian. Anything less than that is going to lead to an absolute collapse. So pick your poison. The reason I like a cap on overall spending is that it gets politicians out of the box of having to pick which programs to cut back. Just cap the whole thing. And then to the extent to which it bumps up against this cap, all programs take a haircut. Politicians don't have to choose which one.
The problem with that, Mike, I'm with you. I see the same problems that you do. But the problem with that is the metrics that we use right now to communicate growth in the economy is GDP. The instant you cut spending to below taxation, GDP is going to contract and people are going to freak out about that. How do we sell that to them? That leaving wealth in the hands of the middle class is going to be an economic engine. How do we sell that to them?
You have to sell it to them by reminding them that when the government spends your money, you're not getting any value out of it. So cutting back on government spending will necessarily slightly cut back overall GDP, but that dislocation is going to be made up. Every time you switch a job from being a government job to a private sector job, the entire nation gets wealthier.
I love it.
And we need to remind people of that the government is not doing things with your money that are in your interest. And so, yeah, there might be a little bit of dislocation. You're right. I'm sorry. The department, you know, the SEC, the Treasury Department, the Justice Department might lose some attorneys who are going to be out there looking for work. And you can feel sorry for them if you want. Boo-hoo. But the truth is they're going to have to find something productive to do. And we're all going to be better off for it, even if there's a moment of dislocation. And I hasten to add, a moment of dislocation now among federal employees is a small price to pay for a major depression in the middle of the century.
Well, to prevent a major depression,
to prevent it. That's exactly right.
And I think it's going to be major. I agree with you.
Absolutely. It's terrifying and people don't know that it's coming. And it's a shame. The government is lying to us.
And the longer we take to solve the problem, the worse it's going to be. And you see what's happening in like Argentina, right? Like it is tough. It is draconian.
And you don't want to get all that deep before you have the guts to elect the next Javier Milei. We have an opportunity now to stop the duopoly in charge of our government. We should take the opportunity in 2024 and not wait another 24 years.
Absolutely. Well, we've now gone about 8 minutes over, which is fine. I will creatively edit the rest of the show so we can make sure we make this work. But I didn't want to cut you off because I offered you two issues. Any other things that we'll give you another minute to make your pitch to voters in the Western New York region.
Oh, well, look, if you're in New York State, you're in the same frame of mind that I am. I've spent many, many years in New York State, and I love you all. I don't understand why the radio station has named itself after Yves Saint Laurent. I've been to Rochester many times. I love Rochester. I made a lot of friends at RIT. I went to RPI, and I was in Buffalo and Syracuse recently. So I got a lot of friends out there and in Poughkeepsie. So I look forward to getting back and being with you. In the meantime, check out our website. You can check out MikeTremont.com, which is hard to spell because Tremont is two A's. But I would encourage everyone to check out GoldNewDeal.org. Gold New Deal is all about a new relationship between us and the government that we will tolerate. So check out GoldNewDeal.org. My contact information is there. Reach out. Let me know what you think.
All right. Right on.
All right, brother.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Mike Tremont, who has joined us here. He is running again for the Libertarian nomination for president. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It's so much fun to be with you. I look forward to it next time. Hey, Rochester.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Take care.
All right. We'll be back here on WYSL in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today. Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today. 585-999-TECH.
Hey, this is Kevin Wilson, host of A Free Solution. You ever need a tool for just one project, but didn't want to spend the cash for something you'd use just once or twice? Well, there's a new tool library in Rochester where you can borrow just the thing you need instead of buying a new one. It's called the Tool Shed from the Southeast Area Coalition, and membership starts at just $25 a year. Use it for home projects or to support your business. Learn more and become a member at seektoolshed.org. That's S-E-A-C, toolshed.org.
In 1926, the Avon Fire Department put an Aaron's Fox pumper into service. It now sits fully restored in a museum near Toronto. Avon has an opportunity to bring the Fox home for its 100th birthday for a fraction of its appraised value. The Aaron's Fox Full Circle Preservation Society needs your help. Look us up on Facebook or call 615-6463. Let's bring home the Fox.
A Free Solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson, today joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
And guys, they were getting used to me being the host, Kevin, and me being the guy not in the conspiracy chair. I just want to say I'm glad you're back. I'm glad to see you. Like, I was worried for you, brother. I was worried, like, not sick. You were pretty confident, so that gave me, like, but I'm glad you're back.
Yeah.
This show missed you. I missed you. And I'm glad to see you're on the mend, bro.
Yeah, no, I'm back. Like, for those of you listening on WSL or online who don't know, I had heart surgery. I had called an atrial septal defect closure. I had a 2-centimeter hole in my heart that was not supposed to be there. So they patched that up. You know, so I was in the ICU for a few days with that. And and then, you know, I ended up going back into the hospital briefly, got a little AFib going on, but that should be good now. And I'm on the mend. I'm getting winded walking upstairs and whatnot, but, like, I'll be back to normal eventually.
Yeah, well, you get to be 58, and that's just like, every day, you know?
I'm young and take my health for granted right now, so, like, I don't like it.
I bet. Yeah, no, I get it, man. I'm just glad you're back. That's all.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to be back and glad you're able to do a few shows with Sean and Cody and Tom. So,
yeah,
good stuff.
Yeah, it was good. It was good to have those guys on. They were great guests. Sean brought a lot of information. He went down the conspiracy theorist wormhole and the pop culture wormhole, which I love. And thankfully you reel us back in from that because it feels dirty. When I'm talking about Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan, it feels dirty.
No, we end up pulling it back to policy. Like, his show is, like, very much about that, which it's an entertaining show, and he comes with a lot of information. So Sean's a lot of fun. And eventually, folks, I'm going to get those up onto our podcast thing as well. I've got to just find the time to edit those. But yeah, so we will stop talking about me eventually soon and start talking about some actual, policy stuff, some stuff happening here in Monroe County and a handful of other issues as well. And so should we talk about the Monroe County district attorney situation?
I don't see how we don't.
Yeah, Tim, did you see?
She is making the news.
She is actually kind of making a stir nationally. So Monroe County District Attorney Sandra Dorley was pulled over in a traffic stop. I think it was about a week ago, but the footage didn't come out until like Friday. The body cam footage. And you know, in full disclosure, like we actually, the Libertarian Party had endorsed her at one point in time for our ballot line, and the reason why I'll say is because I liked her at the time is she talked a lot about her initiatives for like deferral programs, like hey, young people caught up in like bad activity, like how do we get them not in the criminal justice system, but find them in diversion programs to maybe like get their life back on track. And that's what she said the focus of her work was. Right. And so, and we had interviewed the Democratic candidate who mostly talked about like punishing people more. Oh, we're just punishing the wrong types of people. And we got to punch other people more. And I'm like, oh, all right. That's not what we thought you were about. Okay, cool. Thanks. And yeah.
What a surprise, though. Like, it's weird when authoritarianism grabs a hold of somebody, you know what I mean? And they're just like, this is the solution. And it's like, that doesn't sound like a solution. If you're not thinking it through, you're not examining human consequences. I thought our guest, Mike Termott, was great on this stuff. But what the Monroe County DA did.
Yeah. So you
played the club card.
So yeah,
what, like, I'm in the club.
Yeah, basically that's what she did, and that's why a lot of people are upset, because what happened was she was allegedly she was going 55 and a 35, and a police officer attempted to pull her over in Webster, New York, and she didn't pull over. She just kept going, and she kept driving towards her home. She on her way called the chief of police, and tried to explain that she wasn't a threat. And
right to the top.
Yeah. She's a DA. So she's working with all these police departments all the time. So she called her person and said she wasn't a threat and she wasn't going to pull over. And, you know, she had home. And then the police officer, of course, followed her home, lights on, sirens on, went there and was like, hey, you know, this is a traffic stop. Like you need to stop and talk to me, right? Like you're being detained. And the police officer, like, good for him, by the way, like who kept his cool the entire time, like in a tough situation, and must have at that point in time realized who he was pulling over, but stuck to what he was doing, because the law should be applied consistently. And I think that's fair and important. And he tried to issue a speeding ticket, but she was very rude to him. It swore a couple times, tried to, you know, close the door, tried to walk into her house. And basically, she pulled the, like, don't you know who I am card.
Like, the old, hey, I'm in the club with your bosses, buddy.
Yeah.
Do you understand who I am? Man, oh, man. Again, like you said, credit to that cop for not losing his mind. Like, she was basically, I don't know, if it was me, what would they do, Kevin? Let's be honest, if I behaved like
that. No, like any other person, like, we would have been on the ground in cuffs. Right. And that's what like most people are saying. They're like, dude, if we acted like that, like we'd be in the dirt. Like that's like you can't do that. And like I don't think that's the right reaction for police officers to have for someone who's not threatening. But like, because
fair enough,
because I don't think that should have happened to her either. But also, like, again, this is a person who's supposed to be, like, you know, in many ways, the top law enforcement officer of the county. And like, because she's working with police. She talks about how she respects police all the time. And here she is, like, disrespecting this guy who's just doing his job. But what she could have done is just pulled over. And what would have probably happened is a kind of normal, everyday, like, small, like, corruption. He would have seen who it was, and probably, like, she would have gotten off with a warning, right? Like, it's right. Probably what would have happened. Like, oh, this is the DA. This is Sandra Dorley. She would have said she was having a bad day, apologized, and said, okay, no worries, you're getting off with a warning, right? That's probably what would have happened. Instead, you know, again, driving to her house, fleeing the police, you know, and then not cooperating afterwards. And that's what like drives me nuts about this. And I think what drives everyone nuts about this is just that, like, again, to try to exercise that privilege, the like, I've called your boss, I am this political authority, you cannot, you know, like, do this to me. I'm the one who does these tickets anyway, which is what she said. She's like, I'm the one who does these. And so, like, and which she wouldn't, right? Like, when it's her, she's not the one involved. It's her office still, people acting under her authority, but, like, someone else does it. And to try to exercise your privilege like that, to think that you are above the law, is abhorrent to people. It's fundamentally, like, anti-American to do that, right? Like, it we're is. All supposed to be equal. We're all supposed to, you know, be subject to the same laws and the same rules.
And I mean, we're not. We're supposed to be. We're not.
Right? Like, yeah, again, like, you and I have talked about, and we recognize, like, all the ways in which we fall short of that ideal. But to see it put out so blatantly on camera is revolting to people.
Our friend Shelley out there in YouTube land says, we would have been cuffed and stuffed for sure. Like,
yeah,
I think that's correct. I think that's the proper take. And I don't blame people for being mad about it. I really don't.
Yeah,
No. So what are they going to do? Is she going to lose her job? She going to get held accountable? How's this going to work out? She's, you know.
So she couple things happened after step one. She issued a press release, which kind of didn't really match up with the actual situation. And then she issued an apology video where she said basically she was learning about a medical situation with her husband and she was having a bad day, which, okay, I understand. But here's the thing. Police deal with people when they're having the absolute worst day of their lives all the time, right? Yeah. And if they do something illegal while they're having the worst day of their life, for most people, it doesn't matter. You're still going to jail. You flee from the police because you think you're having a bad day. Doesn't matter. You're gonna go to jail for doing that. And she still isn't. Like, there's no way. Like, there's, I'd say, very close to zero chance that, like, she's going to face any, like, criminal consequences for this. Now, is she going to face political consequences for it? Maybe, right? So New York State has, like, a commission that the Governor Hochul is, like, looking into, or she has a commission ready for this type of thing, and will decide, like, if there's any action that should be taken against DAs, like her, who are, you know, brought before this commission. And so maybe something will come of that. I think, like, again, politically, like, people are going to remember this stuff. People are going to remember the way she, you know, try to abuse her position to bully a, you know, police officer into, you know, letting her bad behavior slide. Right. I think that's something voters are going to remember.
One would think, I'm just so jaded about, like, holding our elected officials accountable for anything that I just feel like, starts spending money now. She starts, you know, ASPCA visits, she pets some puppies.
You know, people might forget about it.
You know.
And the thing is, like, the local GOP, they've come out and been like, we fully support her. You know, she's given, like, 30 plus years of her life to, like, supporting law enforcement and putting bad people behind bars and you know, fighting for justice in our community. And so, like, making a bunch of excuses for it. But again, I can't get behind it. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Again, I told you, and I started out with this, like, I liked her. I like what she was trying to do within the confines of the DA system. There's some things that I like what she was trying to do. I endorsed her. I put my name behind that in addition to the parties. Now,
this is the thanks you get.
Yeah, I know, right? That anyone has ever cared about that. But, you know, like, that's, yeah, it's just, it's not great to see. And I can't stand with politicians. I cannot support any politician. I hope she resigns. Like, it's just that type of abuse of power is so fundamentally against what, like, our republic is supposed to be about, that anyone who does it should go. So that's where I am on it.
Maybe she'll resign. Then that way, aren't they obligated to appoint a Republican if she resigns, or no? Is that not how that works?
I don't think so. Which is why the GOP is, like, kind of closing ranks.
Correct. It's an office that they actually hold in New York State, even though
the chances of them electing any more Republicans at the county level it's going to be tough for the next few years. The numbers just aren't looking good in Monroe County for Republicans. So
I hate to be this way, but they've done it to themselves. Yeah. You know, like, they've collaborated when they shouldn't have collaborated. They haven't drawn clean, bright lines about freedom and the necessity to further the goals of liberty ever. They participate in growing the government. Like, they're supposed to be at least an opposition party. They are not.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, on that note, though, we have to have the break. Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today.
Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today. 585-999-TECH.
To live the quality of life we deserve in truth and freedom, informed by our Constitution, our laws, and traditions, we need to pick the best leaders possible. Recent experience certainly illustrates that. Free and accurate elections are essential if we're going to restore our society and safeguard our rights. New York Citizens Audit is a volunteer, nonpartisan group which has been lobbying for open-source audits of the State Board of Elections and reform of the electoral process statewide. Did you know Citizens Audit has uncovered over 1 million felony violations of election law, that in 2020 there were 625,000 more voter registrations than existing voting age citizens in just six New York counties, that there were 338,000 more votes cast than voters who voted? These are just a few shocking examples of the urgent need for reform. You can help. Visit auditny.com and learn the facts, how to volunteer and make a difference in your community. Again, volunteer, donate, or spread the word. Start at auditny.com. That's auditny.com.
A free solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson, here today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. I'm here. And I'm going to be defending my man Trump in this segment.
Of course period. You are. Of course you are. So let's talk about the presidential immunity thing, right? Like just because it feels sort of related to our last segment where we're talking about Monroe County DA Sandra Dorley and politicians kind of acting like they are above the law, right? And so the news around Trump was that his defense team was making the argument that essentially presidents had full immunity, that any actions that they take during their tenure as president are, you know, automatically assumed to be legal, essentially. It's the simplified version of that. And they have immunity for prosecution. And that's the defense is Donald Trump's team's making in this particular case, right? So, Tim, you're gonna defend this. You think that presidents should be able to do whatever they want?
No. I mean, it's hard because here's the reality that what we're seeing with Trump looks like lawfare. And had he been granted some sort of immunity from this kind of prosecution, he'd be able to campaign more effectively, Kevin. He's being prevented from going out on the road and campaigning. And what there is a point in here that while I'm making kind of obnoxious snide jokes, that there is a certain level of vindictiveness in our society, the cyclical authoritarianism. And so immunity for a presidential thing, it's weird for me to say, but there's a danger here in what we're seeing in that they're quashing his free speech. They're going after him on a lot of it looks like trumped up technicalities. And that if he had a blanket immunity type thing, they would be unable to do this. They would be unable to election interfere. I don't know, man. I'm trying.
Yeah, I know you're trying to make the argument. Eventually, what they said essentially is like, while someone is president, that the only meaningful way to like hold them accountable for breaking the law is impeachment, right? That outside of impeachment, right, that there's no way of doing that, and that includes actions taken as president that are then prosecuted after the fact, right? Which is kind of what they're going after here, right? So it's like, you took an action as president that was illegal, and we as the Justice Department or whatever other law enforcement entity could prosecute you for your illegal action, right? So in this case, right, like if the president took a bribe or straight up stabbed someone in the neck in like the Oval Office, like if the Senate is just like, we don't feel like impeaching them, like they're making the argument there's nothing the Justice Department or anyone else could be able to do to hold a president accountable for illegal, corrupt, possibly unknown actions taken as president. I'm giving some pretty extreme examples, but like the corruption thing is I think a pretty plausible example, right? Like there could be like, we find out that Joe Biden like really was like on the take from whoever, right?
The take. It's just he does it legally, okay? Right. He does it within the framework of the laws that they've constructed to enrich themselves, okay? So he's definitely on the take. It's just legal. That's
right.
All.
So, I mean, well, right. Let's say like it was illegal, right? Like Joe Biden has taken illegal bribes from China, hypothetically, right? And Donald Trump wins this election. Could the Justice Department go after him for these types of things?
Under Donald Trump's argument, the answer would be no. Like, we would not be able to prosecute Joe Biden or Donald Trump, yeah, or any of these. So it would only ensure the most corrupt, biggest liar gets to be president, right, forever.
And
you know
so
what I mean? Like,
my take on this is that that's a bad idea. that we should allow presidents after the fact to be held accountable for any crimes they commit in office. Again, regardless of whether or not the accusations against Donald Trump are valid or not, like, I think this is a good and legitimate power of government to be able to go after former office holders for any actual crimes they've committed in office, right? And if that person happens to be running for office again, like, that doesn't matter to me, you know, is it making Trump's life more difficult? Like, yeah, but like, also, if he really did commit crimes, or again, like, setting aside the merits of these individual ones, but if he really did commit crimes, then yeah, that too bad, so sad. Like, you got to face accountability and go to trial for your stuff. And if that makes your campaigning life harder, well, whatever.
Too bad,
like,
right?
Yeah,
too bad. So sad.
I don't care. I don't feel that sympathetic. You know, like, who's that senator from New Jersey? Bob Menendez?
Right. Bob Menendez.
Right. Like,
he's fine.
If he's facing trial during his election, like, are you going to shed any tears over that? Like,
me? Yeah. No. And John Fetterman won't either, which he's pretty awesome. Like, honestly, Fetterman may be my new hero, bro. Like, he's okay. Kind of funny, all over that guy. So look, it gets confusing because there is this whole issue of in Nixon versus Fitzgerald in 1982, yeah, it was ruled at the Supreme Court level that the president has absolute immunity from civil damages in actions regarding conduct within the outer perimeter of their duties. So right. Trump is trying to extrapolate that into short form absolute immunity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, basically, it's going from qualified immunity to absolute immunity, right? That's because, right, like, presidents in some sense do have a level of qualified immunity, right? But right or wrong, they do. If they're doing something
all politicians
that's,
do.
Yeah. If you're doing something that's within the bounds of the legal scope of their job, which, if, as a president, like, does actually include killing people, then yeah, they're immune from that. Like, they can't be held civilly accountable for doing something that is within the legal scope of what they are supposed to and allowed to do.
Correct.
So
that was what the ruling for the in the Nixon case was, right? Then there was the Clinton versus Jones in 1997. The court ruled against temporary immunity for sitting presidents from suits arising from pre-presidential conduct. And so the Stormy Daniels case, he wouldn't get out of that anyway, right?
Yeah,
like, right, he wasn't president then. Like, it would still be something they could argue over in court.
Yeah. And so really, like, this specific case is, you know, something he did in office that is allegedly outside of the scope of the office and therefore not protected by his, like, qualified immunity should he be immune from those actions. And then, again, they are making the political argument that you made, too, that this is functionally election interference, that the Biden Justice Department is, right, bringing these not for the sake of seeking actual justice, but for the sake of making it difficult for his opponent to win.
It certainly on some level, and not even on some level, a lot of it appears like that to me, because they get in the weeds with their discussion. They made charges that were abstract, and then they are trying to bring it home at a time when I think it's inappropriate. They could have brought this home at January 7th. They could have brought this home, you know, 2020, right? Like, they could have went after him then and dealt with this then and either lost or won their cases then. And arguably then the claims were they didn't have enough evidence to prosecute him. And now they've found the evidence over time. I don't buy that argument. That argument is always something that's non-persuasive to me. Finding evidence that these lawyers that are making $450 an hour aren't incentivized to go find evidence when they can charge their $450 an hour. Like, I'm not persuaded by that. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, it does make sense. This is tough because there's a lot of things where I think there really is something there, but also the system is so consistently abused and used in the way that you're describing that it's hard to disentangle that from
both what I see as actual wrongdoing and like my political inclinations as well. So I'm trying to be a bit objective, but
no, look, I understand it. I understand some of the arguments about, oh my God, look how much trouble he is in with all these courts. And then I try to examine the issues that are being presented in the courts. And I'm like,
no, like some are very silly. Like the New York ones, like, oh man, the New York ones are so dumb, but it just did total reach. We can't jump into that too much because we are out of time for the show.
Oh man.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution on WYSL. Appreciate y'all being here. Have a great night, folks. Take care.